Today's podcast is presented by Podgo. Podgo is the easiest way for you to monetize your podcast, providing podcasters with a flat rate for ad space so you always know how much you get when you include an ad from Podgo. Apply today to become a member and immediately be connected with advertisers that fit your audience. That's podgo.co at podgo.co. And be sure to add our podcast down the rabbit holes in the How Did You Hear About Podgo section of your application.
A missing person is a person who has vanished and is unconfirmed as alive or dead, as their location and fate are unknown.
Welcome back to Down the Rabbit Holes podcast. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Amy. I am excited to tell you about this because I think it's going to trigger you. It might even trigger one of those conversations we have later. But...
oh, goodness.
I know. And if I say any more, I'm going to totally give it away. So I'm not going to do that. But I also am notorious for... skipping over housekeeping, so I don't want to jump in until I give you the opportunity to dive on in.
I mean, I don't really have anything. It's never a bad time to say follow us on social media. If you're not, you know, you should be because we have great discussions. Patreon is ad-free and extra content, but that's all I got.
All right. Awesome. I'm going to jump on in if you don't mind.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. Okay. I'm excited because you very rarely, like, have teasers for an episode.
You're so right. Well, today is a new day.
Usually you just dive in. Today you've been like, oh, this.
I picked this case because it triggered something recent. So, I'm just going to tell you. The case I'm going to talk to you about today is the case of Charlotte Polis. Charlotte Polis was born on July 4th of 1965. Charlotte was the oldest of six kids. So a lot of the background information I got, unfortunately, was not on typical Charlie Project or anything like that. I need to give a ton of credit for everything that I've gathered to the Unfound podcast, who the host actually interviewed Charlotte's brother. And it was an extensive episode. It was longer than an hour, I believe. And I want to make it really clear. Like, I'm actually not going to share information purposely because I do want there to be enough information and the credit given. But I also want you to go and listen to her brother speak and the host. He does a really great job of asking these questions and trying to figure out everything that happened with Charlotte. So please, please, please go check it out if you have interest in this case. So just be mindful that that information comes directly from the Unfound podcast.
Okay.
So Charlotte was the oldest of six kids. Family life was overall described as a good one. The family took vacations. I don't know how you do that with six kids, but great. And they just generally had good time spent together. There doesn't sound like there was, like, this conflict between the kids. Like, I'm sure there was the obvious bickering and things like that. But generally, they all had great relationships with one another, even until adulthood. Charlotte and her mother were especially close. I mean, her mother could have been close with all of them, but Charlotte and her mother had a particular, really close relationship. And I'll talk about that very briefly a little bit later. Charlotte's brother recounted his sister as people-pleasing. She would give the shirt off her back. That was her nature. And she had hopes of having a family one day. Charlotte met Paul Polis around 1985 when she was approximately 19 years old. Paul appeared kind and Charlotte seemed enamored with him. Charlotte's brother accounts that from day one, he didn't like Paul. And he kind of felt like Paul was two people. He doesn't really elaborate on that, and I don't think he even knows how to put it into words. It was all just like these feelings that he had. Paul also grew marijuana and smoked it, and I think that didn't really make anything better with Charlotte's brother. He didn't really approve of that. I think he was involved maybe in some way, shape, or form with law enforcement, so he was kind of like, dude, like, don't tell me about it, don't talk about it, don't do it. Not cool. So they got along, I think, or maybe they were civil, but deep down, I don't think he liked Paul. Within a few years, Charlotte and Paul were married, approximately 1990, and they had two children. Although Charlotte's brother states that Paul seemed a little controlling, no one has reported abuse at all in the marriage. Charlotte and her mother always remain close. They talk several times each day. Her mother is quoted as saying that they spoke anywhere from 10 to 14 times every day. So shortly before Charlotte's disappearance, there wasn't anything that came up that was a big deal, but there was a couple of, or at least one specific incident that Charlotte's brother recalls, where Charlotte had just kind of out of nowhere said, if anything happens to me, take care of my children. And her brother was kind of like, well, why would you say that? Where did that come from? Well, of course we will. But of course, like, why, though? Is he hitting you? And he actually said, is Paul hitting you? And he was like, because I'll go right upstairs and I will show him and he will never lay a hand on you again. Charlotte was like, no, nothing like that, which it might have been. I mean, her brother even says, well, she could have been like going over her life insurance policy or something like that. And it could have been nothing. But after everything he knew later, I think he thought maybe it was something. So on March 11th of 1994, Charlotte, Paul, Charlotte's brother, and his wife were all supposed to go out for his birthday. But Charlotte called early on to say that she wasn't really feeling well. Paul eventually took Charlotte to the ER that day. So she was feeling pretty lousy. I guess she had an earache and she was feeling really dizzy and nauseous. And like you might suspect by the symptoms, she was diagnosed with an inner ear infection, which was pretty severe, and she was prescribed medication. Paul and Charlotte returned home to where Paul's parents had been watching the kids while they were away, and this was anywhere around 1 in the morning. Charlotte briefly spoke with her mother, and they hung up around 1:30 a.m. At about 9 a.m., Charlotte's mother called to check in. Paul picked up and said,
I think that's pretty normal behavior.
So far, I mean, if you had told me this much of the story, I would be like, what? I don't hear anything alarming, right?
Right.
Charlotte's mother called to check in, like I said, and Paul picked up the phone and said that Charlotte was still sleeping per the doctor's orders. So he kind of alluded to she's just needs a little bit of rest. That's what the doctor told her to do. That's what she's doing. I think Charlotte's mother was a little bit hesitant, like, maybe worried mother, and she just wanted to hear her daughter's voice to make sure that she sounded okay. Because, you know, a mom just knows by the sound of their child, right?
Right.
So, according to Paul, he hung up that phone, and he said at around 11 o'clock, he checked in on Charlotte, and she was still resting, and he told her to keep resting, and that he was going to go out and do errands for the days and bring the children. He was going to bring back meds. Don't worry about it. Then he packed up the kids for the day and ran out. Paul said that he went to the pharmacy. He went to the laundromat, the scrapyard. He got the kids some fast food, and then he drove around for about 3 hours looking at for sale homes because I guess eventually they planned on moving and maybe he's out there looking for, I don't know, houses that would appeal to him. Whatever. I think he also just wanted to give Charlotte space so that she wouldn't have to get up and...
Right. Tend to the kids or whatever.
Right. Because a mom who's sick hears their kid crying. Who cares that they're sick? They're going to get up and they're going to go run to their kid because they don't want them to cry for them.
Right.
He comes home. He states that the time was about 4 p.m. and Charlotte wasn't there. And he wasn't alarmed at all. Like, he thought, well, maybe Charlotte was feeling better. And she got up and went out. It wasn't until around 7 p.m., though, that he's putzing around the house and he notices Charlotte's purse. Well, his first thought is, what's going on? Because Charlotte would never leave anywhere without her purse.
But can you back up for 1 second?
Sure.
So he gets home around 4 and she's not there.
Correct.
and that doesn't, like, ring, that doesn't make him a little nervous? She was in the hospital, has an ear infection. Like, where would she have gone?
That's a great question. Maybe a little bit weird, but maybe he's like, she slept all day, got up, was feeling well enough. Maybe she felt like she needed to go out and get something.
Or fresh air, I guess. Because I know, like, when I'm sick and I finally start feeling better, I'm like, I want to go for a ride, get fresh air, like, feel like a human.
I mean, yes, I agree with you. And I could see how he might think that. So, at this point, at 7 o'clock, he's a little worried. And he ends up calling Charlotte's parents, amongst some other people, I think. And he's like, I'm getting a little freaked out here. Charlotte's not home. I don't know where she is. Her purse is here. Call me back. Let me know if you've seen her. They obviously get the message, and they're immediately panicked. So they all go over to Charlotte and Paul's home. And I think they want to know, like, what's going on? What do we plan on doing? Maybe she'll stroll back in the door. Best case scenario. So when they're at the house and they're going through all of this, one odd thing that was noticed by Charlotte's sister was that she's looking out the window and she notices the shed that they have in the backyard that's locked with, like, two doors that open and shut are bulging, like, literally bulging. And she notices two sets of footprints from the house to the shed. So I don't know what struck her curiosity or what she actually thought in that moment, but she asked Paul for the key. And Paul, by the family's account, becomes immediately annoyed. And he's kind of like, that has nothing to do with her disappearance. Forget about it. In an interview with him on Unsolved Mysteries, he says, well, I imagine it had nothing to do with it. I had an extra key somewhere. If they had asked for it, I would have given them that. But I don't remember this incident at all. So they never inevitably got into that shed. In the days after the disappearance, Paul's mother and father stayed at the home. And it was noticed that they did an excessive amount of cleaning. In the Unsolved Mysteries episode, there was no denial that the family was cleaning. And Paul's mother was like, yeah, I actually just, like, scrubbed the floor because all the babies do is drop food on the floor. And she completely dismissed that the house had been scrubbed clean, basically.
Well, okay, so to play devil's advocate for a second, whenever anyone goes through anything, a death in the family or a sickness or whatever, the first thing I feel like moms do is take care of things, like clean the house.
That's totally fair.
Right. So to me, that's not abnormal if, like, she's expecting her daughter-in-law to come home. She wants her to come home to a clean house, the baby's taken care of, you know, all of that.
I agree with you, except for it makes me wonder in the things that come next. So the police eventually get involved, and they start with interviewing people, right? So Paul gives his account of the day, which I've already told you, and Paul seems very forthcoming, willing to work with the police and all of that stuff. And then they start talking with, for example, the neighbors and Charlotte's mother and everything. So as soon as Charlotte's mother hears Paul's account of the day, she scratches her head at first and she goes, wait a minute. So, yeah, I called Charlotte around 9 a.m. And then at about 10 a.m., I called again, and I called for every 10 minutes for at least a half an hour. Now, Paul said he left at 11, but if that were true, then he would have picked up the phone. So that makes me a little bit wary. Then a neighbor comes forward and says, I actually remember seeing Paul that morning at about 10 minutes to 11, and his car was backed up in the front yard all the way to the house by the porch. And the trunk was open and all four doors were open. That neighbor said that that car was packed full of boxes and bags and that there would be absolutely no way that car seats could fit in there. And she thought that that was bizarre. Eventually, police continue with their investigation. You know, Paul's starting to look a little bit questionable at this point, and they're able to do a search of the house. They didn't find anything And they even went as far as doing a luminol test. Now, if you remember what a luminol test is, and I'm sure all of you do, it's the special chemical reaction. You can spray it in an area where you think there might be blood. And the chemical reaction makes the blood glow in the dark. And they sprayed it, and their response to that was, this house was so pristine that they would never expect to see something like that. Like, it was the cleanest, most, almost eerie, the way that it had been cleaned. And obviously, they found nothing. They searched the car, and they just about found nothing until they searched the trunk. And they were able to identify what looked like human blood, just one drop of it. But remember, this is 1994. They did not have advanced DNA analysis. So, yes, OJ, 1994, 1995, we were able to do DNA testing and stuff like that. But remember, Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman's murder scene was, they were savagely stabbed. There was blood everywhere. So they had plenty of samples. But we're talking in this case about a very small sample that was not able to be tested at the time. So I'm just going to tell you one thing about that. And then if you're curious about more, that is where I will direct you to the podcast, because there is so much more about missing evidence in this case. That blood sample ended up going missing. And there's some speculation about some conspiracy covert stuff. So if you want to check that out, please do. Very interesting. So eventually they decide that they want to polygraph Paul, right? They're doing all the things. They're doing a pretty good job and they're following up. So they schedule a polygraph test for Paul. The day of the test comes. And what do you think happened?
He decides he's not going to take it.
Oh, even worse.
Oh, good.
He disappears.
What?
He disappears.
What do you mean disappears?
Oh, he leaves a note and he's like, see you later, guys.
So I now understand why you think this triggers current cases. Because it is October 8th today. And I want to say, what did Brian Laundry listen to this case?
Right. Because we have some questionable parenting practices, for lack of better words. And we have a complete I'm leaving town kind of thing. Except in this case, I will say that Paul returned 3 months later.
3 months? Where'd he go?
Well, I don't know where he went, but he said that he had kind of like a mental breakdown, or he had really taken Charlotte's disappearance terribly. And he really just needed to be alone.
Of course he did.
All the police could do at that point is file charges for obstructing, but that really didn't go anywhere.
Right, because what you can't, obstructing is not, not taking a polygraph is not obstructing.
But the leaving.
Maybe, did it stick?
No, I mean, that's what it is. So we're right. Making the arguments, and why it didn't stick is reasonably why it didn't stick. So that's inevitably kind of where like the big stuff happened in the case. Charlotte's never been recovered. She's never had any sightings. Charlotte was about 300 pounds at the time of her disappearance. So, you know, it's been argued that she would probably be reasonably recognizable. She's got big, dark, beautiful hair. And, you know, inevitably that's, like I said, it. So Paul, now that we know, 'cause we're, you know, 20 years, more than, way more than 20 years, 30 years past her disappearance, has been involved in a string of legal altercations. A lot of it's drugs related, things like that. Not exactly sure where he is or what he's doing now, but, you know, things didn't turn out too well for Paul. So, yeah, you want to talk theories?
Yeah.
Well, okay. There really isn't any talk or suspicion of dying by suicide. There is talk about her leaving her life. There's talk, quite obviously, of Paul being involved in her disappearance. And then there is Paul and who helped Paul, and possibly his parents. And that is honestly really it. There's no random foul play really being brought up. And well, I guess you can guess that, you know, Paul's family stands by, we have no idea what happened.
Obviously.
And Charlotte's family says, we believe Paul was involved with her disappearance.
Okay, so let's talk about her leaving her life. So I'm assuming that it starts with the statement of, if something happens to me, take care of my children.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. And then if we believe Paul's story of he went out and came home to her being gone, that aligns with her leaving her life.
Sure. So one thing I left out, but would make it a little bit difficult to leave your life, is that they didn't have another car, allegedly. So if she got up and left, she would have had to have been on foot or been picked up.
Okay, aside from those two factors, are there any other factors that make us say she could have left her life?
I find it hard to believe that a woman that talks to her mother 10 to 14 times a day and is very close with her siblings and is, devoted to her children can do that so easily. Just cut off relationships with everybody.
Right. No. So there's nothing else that says, yes, she did.
Correct.
There's a lot more in the column of no, she didn't.
Right.
Okay. So let's talk about Paul.
Yeah, let's.
Tell me why he does it.
Well, I suspect just kind of on Charlotte's brother's thoughts about some controlling behavior that perhaps, you know, he maybe wasn't physically abusive, who knows, but mentally, emotionally, and this guy didn't like not being the man of the house, you know, things like that. I can't help but to think that night something frustrating happened, and they probably thrown divorce at each other before, or I'm leaving you. But this time, I think Charlotte said, and I'm taking the kids with me, or the kids are going to be with me, something like that. And I think that would have been the thing that threw Paul over the edge. And I don't think that if he hurt her, that it was necessarily premeditated, but I definitely think he reached a level of anger and he just couldn't stop himself.
Okay, so they get home from the hospital. She calls her mom around 1 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And then at some point between then and, I mean, when did he call and report her missing?
Well, he called her family and they came over at, if he called them at 7, they must have probably been there by 8. And that's my estimate.
Well, we'll just say till 7 then.
Yeah.
So he has 18 hours. How old were her kids?
One of them was 4, and I think the other one was 2. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that one of them was 4.
Did they ever do cognitive interviews with them?
So there's been, the family of Charlotte has stated that they really think that that daughter or that child saw something because she has said things that are really disturbing. She's had a fear of trash bags, but I don't know. To my knowledge, I don't know that they've had like a forensic interview.
Okay, so the only thing don't get me wrong, it looks bad for Paul, right? But the only thing I'm going to say is grandparents' influence is a thing. And if her parents are squarely pointing at him, how do we know that little girl isn't not being coached, but being influenced?
Yeah, like covertly maybe. And that's a real possibility. But let's not leave out the fact that there's this bulging shed with 2 sets of footprints there. Now, Paul's about 150 pounds, so he most likely would have needed help to transport Charlotte wherever.
You think his parents helped him?
That is a theory that's out there, that something happened in the middle of the night. Paul called his mom, his dad, I don't know, both of them, and his dad came over and helped him at least put Charlotte in that shed until she could be transported somewhere else.
Okay, so let's say that she calls the family They come over, and he says he doesn't have a key to the shed, whatever. It would be really, really ballsy to have her body in there. Because what if they call the cops right then?
Well, if it was a crime of passion, then anything he was doing was taking a chance. I mean, he's at this point where he's covering...
Yeah, but we're 18 hours later. To have the body there and have her family there...
I don't know if he thought they would have come. I don't know, but...
I think you're more likely in that shed was evidence, not the body.
Possibly. Possibly.
But then where's the body now?
I mean, he had quite a bit of time to take care of it. And he quite possibly could have done that with his daughters in the car. But if you take the neighbor that said that car was full, then where were the children? They were either with his parents.
With his parents.
Or he left them alone.
No, I think they would have said that.
No one would have known.
What do you mean?
Well, his alibi is that he took the girls out for the day.
Right, and I'm saying, like, 4 years old, right? They may not understand bodies in trash bags, but they certainly understand they were left home alone or they went out with their dad. Like, that's something that Charlotte's parents or his parents could ask and I think reasonably expected an honest answer.
So is it possible that Paul and his dad took the body to X and then Paul took the children out for the day to have an alibi and Paul's father and mother took care of the body and cleaned up the house?
I'm trying to think of words that are not swears.
I know.
If that's what happened, that is beyond sick. I would like to think that Paul's parents took... I mean, no. I'd like to think if Paul did it, his parents were not enabling this and saying, it's okay that you killed your wife. And they were saying, no, you gotta face the music. But at the very least, I hope they were saying, well, take your kids while you deal with your mess. As opposed to saying, we will deal with your mess.
What are your thoughts? Please see Exhibit A, the laundry family.
I know. That's Amy. Amy and I, once a day, will send each other something about the laundry family.
Yep.
And it's not very nice. That's the best way I have to describe it.
Yeah. So, I hate to suspect that, but okay, we've written off some theories because they didn't make sense. This has a whole lot of holes in the story, or at least some really shady stuff happening.
Although I will say, so I just obviously Googled the case, right? Because that's what we do.
Yep.
And there's a whole Reddit thread about how he's getting railroaded, essentially.
I did not look at Reddit. You know me and Reddit.
I hate it because it's chaotic. Yeah. Okay, this says, the wife may say something like he's been really stressed out to her mother over the phone. Then, when she goes missing, the mother is telling the police that she was threatened by him. It happens all the time like this. Your words get twisted. Also, where are the kids now? I would think one of them would have remembered something. And also, cops aren't bad at talking to kids. I'm surprised the kids didn't accidentally give up the dad. Then they go on to say, a different poster wrote, Charlotte was left alone all day, weak, and just come home from the hospital. There are tons of things that could have happened to her. She could have gotten up, left the house, and she could have been having an affair. She could have been misdiagnosed. Someone could have lured her away and forced her away. There's lots of options, which, I hear you there, but like...
But I feel like the way that we laid it out,
the odds?
We didn't really have a lot to support that.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you. I'm just trying to think through, like, what the other alternatives are.
If she leaves, like I said, she's on foot or someone picks her up. In broad daylight. Where neighbors can see you. I mean, most of the time, not all, most of the time when people are trying to have affairs and you know your husband's out doing errands with no particular time to expect him home, you're taking a huge risk. Like, most people that have affairs are trying to be discreet. So to walk out of your house, maybe your husband and your children are going to come home at that moment, and your neighbors know you, hop into a car with someone that you're having an affair with, seems really risky.
But then I go back to the neighbor seeing the full car. Even if they got the day wrong, I'd like to know what was in the car.
And for him, he totally can't, he's, to my knowledge, has not said that that ever happened. And especially not on that day, because that is the exact time he was supposed to have been leaving the house with the girls to go out for errands.
Right, but I'm saying, like, maybe the neighbor got the day wrong, right? Like, maybe it was a Friday, not a Saturday, whatever it might be.
Possibly.
But I'd still like to know what they were loading up and had a car full of. And where were the kids?
Mm-hmm. I agree with you.
I don't know. Well, this is terrible, Amy. But I definitely see the Paulus family and the Laundrie family getting along.
Yes. So there's just hints of that really bother me.
Yeah.
And I get what you're saying. Grandma comes over. She wants to care for the kids. She wants to clean and stuff. But then you have experts come in with luminol and say, this house is more pristine than you'd ever expect.
Yeah, but like that I have to chalk up to her being a mom and cleaning.
I don't know when you use that stuff on a ceiling.
That to me doesn't say that's an innocent guilt thing.
Well, I will say that, again, treading lightly because I want the credit to go to this podcaster. You know, there are other things involved in this case that involve lost evidence, etc. And I encourage you to go listen to that if you are really interested in this case because it's kind of mind-blowing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So
do you land 100% on Paul? Is that where you land?
I do. This guy has pretty successful parents. He appears kind of controlling, maybe a little narcissistic. And then after her death, he has many run-ins with the law. Money laundering, drugs, embezzling, stuff like that. So he's not living a very lawful life. And yes, none of this is murder.
Yeah, but people, you know.
But if you can do some of these things over and over and over again, and you know that people get hurt, where's the line for you?
Right. I know. I think I'm like 90%. No, maybe even less than that. I think I'm like 80% on Paul and 20% she left.
Yeah, maybe I'm like 95 that it's Paul and 5% she left. I don't think that she wouldn't have had a single sighting.
And I'll tell you this, if it's Paul, I'm 90% sure his parents helped.
I'm positive. Well, not fair. I am so confident that he had help because to carry any dead body is, to my understanding, very difficult. But to be a 150-pound man carrying a 300-pound body, even if it wasn't snowing or anything like that where you'd actually have to carry them, I don't see how he would be able to do that without leaving something behind.
Yeah, and I agree with you there.
Well, I certainly hope it's not parents and not loving all this enabling.
Yeah, no, not at all. I have no problem with you, and I'll say the same thing about the Laundrie family. I have no issue with them hiring him a lawyer. I have no issue that them supporting him. I have no issue with them, whatever. I take issue with allowing him to disappear and to not make him face consequences for whatever his action may be.
Right, because it looks bad. Someone prove me wrong on that case in particular.
For sure. But Charlotte also needs justice. So if you have an opinion and it's not Paul, we'd love to hear it.
Yes. All right, guys. Well, we'll see you on social media, and we will be back next week with an all-new episode.
All right, guys. Bye.
For more information about this case and other cases we've covered, visit our website at www.downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Follow us and interact with us on social media. On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, we are Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast. You can also reach out to us via email at theories@downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
The Holes Podcast is a 2002 production written, hosted, and developed by Amy Lamar and Melissa Benitez. Music by Kevin Wyman. Audio production
by Amy Lamar.